Stripe helps many of the world's most influential companies grow their revenue and build a more profitable business. Whether it's Hertz making checkout a smooth ride for their customers, OpenAI answering unprecedented demand, or PGA chipping away at back office inefficiency, Stripe's financial infrastructure platform helps companies achieve ambitious goals. No matter what success looks like for your business, Stripe helps ensure the complexity of financial systems doesn't get in your way. Learn more at stripe.com.
Is it time to reimagine your future? The right business skills may make a difference in your career. At Capella University, we offer a relevant education that's designed to focus on what you need to know in the business world. We'll teach professional skills to help you pursue your goals, like business management, strategic planning, and effective communication. And you can apply these skills right away. A different future is closer than you think with Capella University. Learn more at capella.edu.
Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland
on News Talk.
So let's have a look at those stories that are making the papers this morning. I'm delighted to be joined by, as I said, two A-listers in the form of Susan Hayes Culleton of Hayes Culleton. She's also known as the Positive Economist, and also joined by Doug Keating of Avalon. Good morning to you both.
Morning, morning Bobby.
Now, Doug, we might start with you. It's chaos with Holyhead being closed. 11 days to save our Christmas, we're told in the Irish Daily Mail. But this is a real problem for retailers, for medical supplies, and there's quite a backlog out there.
There's a very serious backlog, Bobby. Obviously, Storm Dara last week damaged the infrastructure in the port of Holyhead. And obviously we know that as somewhere you might get the ferry or drive over to, but also it has huge amounts of freight go through that port. I think it's 2,000 trailers a day, and that's been shut now and isn't due to reopen until December the 19th. The backlog was as much as 500,000 items. It's actually come down significantly to 150,000, but it's still a huge problem. The story has an interview with a gentleman called Darren Murphy from BM Transport, who's runs a big haulage business. He's had 90 trucks stuck in Holyhead for the last week. And you obviously have foodstuffs, perishables, important healthcare equipment. And more importantly, and I'm aware of this because I'm suffering it myself, is, you know, people's Christmas gifts maybe that they ordered in the UK coming over. The only upside I can see from this is it could be used as an excuse for the people who maybe haven't been so quick at doing their Christmas shopping. Now, one thing that is happening is, you know, the reason that backlog is coming down is because there obviously are other routes over the Irish Sea, Pembroke, Rosslare, Lawn Stranraer, Liverpool, and you know, a lot of the stuff is being moved there, but it's a problem. Unpust are quoted in the story saying, look, as long as it gets to Ireland by the 21st of December, if it gets to us by then, we'll get it to you for Christmas.
Doug mentioned there, Susan, the effect it's having on other ports, such as Stranraer, such as Fishguard, but they seem to be struggling to cope.
Well, they naturally are, because they're not just dealing with the traffic that's coming through those existing ports, but the higher levels as a result of trying to reorganise everything. A couple of numbers stand out here to me. One is the actual transport of people. It says here that 100,000 people who travel from the UK to Ireland for Christmas by ferry may struggle to do so. And then it says that there are 4,000 slots in airlines which provide breathing space. Now, there's a big difference between 100,000 and 4,000.
Yeah.
There, and also, of course, there are a lot of people travel on ferries because of a lot of luggage and a fear of flying. So therefore,
but
there's also like that then obviously has a really big knock-on effect. The big story in this, I think, that stands out to me is not just the current existing situation as a result of Storm Dara. The underlying reason all of this is happening is just in time, is because so much manufacturing is done just on time. And of course, bringing this came up with the Suez Canal, it's came up with COVID as well, is the localization of supply chains, that when you realize the further away things are and the more touch points there are to getting them, well, then the more vulnerable it is in actually delivering the final product. But when we realise just how much companies rely on things happening in the right way, you just see what the risk management is like and when things go wrong.
Yeah. One thing struck me actually is the set for Mary Poppins, which is meant to be on the Borgosh Energy Theatre, is stuck
is on a boat
in Holyhead, and they've had to cancel some of the performances.
Oh my God, I didn't hear that. Wow. Wow. Susan, let's look at some, I suppose, economic data. High services inflation means gradual rate cuts still needed. I know our own governor of the central bank was out recently talking about their strategy around this.
I was hosting a breakfast on Tuesday morning for Danske Bank in the north of Ireland, and you know, a row broke out between the economist that I was interviewing and another person on the panel, and that is because there is a big...
Well, there'll be no row here, let me tell you.
But it was just interesting how the conversation was, the difference between what economists say and the way in which it comes across and how people are feeling. So the point that's being made here in this case is that there's high services inflation, which means that gradual rate cuts are still needed. Now, Irish people might be listening, or people in Ireland might be listening today and saying, but what's this talk about inflation? I feel that prices are higher than they were. So the fact that inflation might be coming under control doesn't mean that things are any cheaper. But technically, inflation is the rate of change of prices as distinct to the prices level, the price level that is in the system. The point that is being made here is that two thirds of core inflation is being made up with services, and services inflation is currently higher. It's now around
4%. Can I just maybe 4%. Stop you there, Susan? Because things like core inflation... Like, they break down inflations and they include things and they don't. And I think people end up confused by that.
Well, they do. And the reason for that is, so core inflation is when you strip out the volatile elements like food and energy. And of course, the challenge that people are probably shouting at me about now saying is that, but sure, that takes up an awful lot of what I spend my money on. So why are they extracting that? The reason is that if you're trying to manage expectations and inflation around things that are very, very volatile, it makes it very, very difficult. And also, just as Christine Lagarde said during the week, when you have the lagged effects of monetary policy, like interest rate increases, you're trying to play with too much of a moving target entirely. So that's the reason that they do that.
But by all this splitting of different inflations, you can really give out any story you like. Do you know what I mean? If you focus in on one,
you can.
Versus the collective.
But at the end of the day, Bobby, all that matters is what people feel. And what people are feeling when it comes, for example, to a change in interest rates, which we saw cutting this week, it means that potentially, and that word needs to be underlined, bolded and in red, potentially, for example, an interest rate cut in their mortgage or other things.
Which would be
like
good
that.
News for many people.
But the other thing here is that and it's so important to highlight this, is that what we're experiencing in Ireland is very different, of course, to what's being experienced across the Eurozone, because what's going on in France and Germany is very different. The ESRI had a report out this week, for example, pointing out that modified domestic demand in Ireland is very significant now at 3.4%. So, like, the Irish economy is growing. But if you take a look at Germany and France, and notwithstanding their political situations, that you're dealing with a very, very different situation as distinct to a growing economy here.
Yeah. Doug, Japanese company Sojitz, I believe it's called, buying 98% of Pinergy as the Coates family sells shares. Interesting development.
Yeah, so Pinergy, many people will be familiar with it as an energy business in Ireland. And what I hadn't realised actually was that it was owned by this Coates family, who are interesting when you read their backstory. They are worth over 8 billion euros. They are the family that set up Bet365 in the UK. Peter Coates, the founder of the business, now run by his daughter Denise. And so whilst I'm sure they'll welcome this sale of a business that they invested over 80 million euros into, and whilst we don't know what it sold for, I guess we would presume it's significantly more than that. It's a business that made 250 million euros in 2023 EBITDA, which is a measure of profitability of 13 million. They may not notice, you know, given their massive wealth.
So if they got 8 times EBITDA, just say,
let's say 120, 100 something.
And if they invested 80, then it's 40 million profit.
Yeah. So look, we're speculating there. But look, the business has 141 employees in Ireland. It's now going to be under this new Japanese ownership. Sojitz has a number of investments across Europe in energy and renewable energy, so they seem to know the sector. The founders are staying on board, Peter Bastable and Enda Gunnell. They will keep their 2% management stake to keep the business going. So look, I think it's a successful transaction. It looks like of a business that, you know, was entrepreneurial and has done a good job and hopefully had a healthy exit.
Interesting, Susan. The its electricity supply base is equivalent to powering 200,000 homes annually across 10,000 commercial and 30,000 domestic customers.
So I
was just trying to equate the size of the big business relative to the competition.
Well, what I was thinking about here is that how much energy, that as it goes on to point out, how much that it's supplying, but also it just shows that this is where the interest is in the energy market now, is supplying green energy, and because that's what people want. And I think as businesses are looking towards the year and years ahead, like as we have to report on, for example, Scope 1, 2 and 3 with CSRD coming down the tracks as well. Well, and it's already here in some cases. Like people are going to have to report on their energy, on their environmental footprint. And therefore, the ability to transfer into areas like this is going to be critical for them. So they really are tapping into a very ripe market. In addition as well, I think it's noteworthy that a third of Ireland's energy this year came from wind. So we are greening, not at the pace that we need to, but we are certainly greening. And this company is, I'd say, finger right on the pulse.
Very interesting. Doug, Joe Brennan has an interesting piece in today's Irish Times about the future of permanent TSB. Some job cuts being talked about here, but he does give a good analysis of, you know, where it's come from and its place in the overall market.
Yeah, and I think it's the challenge that PTSB has is one of scale. You know, as Joe says in his article, its share price is down 15% this year, making it one of the worst performers amongst the European banks. The sector as a whole is up 25%. So what is the reason for that underperformance? And he talks about it being a subscale business. So if you look at it, it has about 29 billion euros in assets. But compare that to Bank of Ireland or AIB, both having, you know, in excess of 130, in Bank of Ireland's case, nearly 160 billion euros of assets. And the issue is that PTSB seems to have a cost base that is too high relative to its assets. So its costs are equivalent to 66% of its income each year, whereas for Bank of Ireland and AIB, that number is closer to 40%. PTSB makes 219,000 euros in revenue per employee. That's over 400,000 for AIB and Bank of Ireland. So I guess
half, effectively.
Yes. Yeah,
less than half.
So, you know, it has just over 3,000 staff. It's grown significantly in recent years in terms of size. But it looks like there is going to be some kind of a voluntary redundancy program. The Financial Services Union out there representing its members, obviously unhappy about this, calling the move reckless and damaging. PTSB management coming back saying this is speculative and unhelpful. So we're into the usual Punch and Judy of labour relations there. But at some stage soon, I presume we'll get some kind of a gauge of the actual number involved. But it looks like it'll be several hundred.
Interesting as well, Susan, looking at some maybe bumps in the problems that are lying. That you've got Bank Killin with their Avant money. They're going to turn into a full bank. There's speculation about that. You also have Revolut getting into the mortgage businesses. Mm-hmm. So you've got the greater market changing as well, which will influence this.
So if I could add two perspectives on this, one is the competition and one is the investability of the business. So from the competition's point of view, if you take the three main banks, they have 93% of the mortgage market between them. Now, if anybody is looking for a new mortgage today or is looking to switch, I mean, I would definitely be going onto the CCPC website. The money, that's where I always go anyway, every time that I'm looking for anything financial, because that automatically calculates the best deal in the market. And you will invariably see Avant Money up there very, very highly when it comes to when it comes to borrowing money. But indeed, as you say, Bobby, next year, it looks like that Spain's Bankinter is turning its Irish unit Avant Money into potentially offering a deposit offering as well. Now, Revolut, I think, is interesting. Revolut has narrowed its entry point into the Irish mortgage market to between April and June 2025. It already has 2.7 million customers, which equates to 3/4 of the population in Ireland so far. Now, when I think of Revolut, and I'm a customer myself, I think of revving money, as the kids would say today, revving money between A and B. But that's a very different animal to be actually to being able to borrow money from them, particularly when you're borrowing money over a very long period of time. And Revolut has had, you know, when it doesn't have a physical presence, people may not necessarily like that to the same extent. So I think when you look at those two challengers, that could shake up the whole 93%.
Yeah.
And then that certainly posed a challenge. But I also went on this morning and I looked at the PE ratio from an investability point of view on Davy's website, and I see that the PE ratio is 12.92, which means that if you're buying a share of Irish Life, or sorry, of Permanent TSB, apologies, harking back to an era gone by. If you're buying a share that is currently 12.92 times its earnings, which does show that there is value in the stock. But and the other thing is that I found its PE ratio is actually higher than AIB's and Bank of Ireland's, again, based on Davy's website, which does show that investors are, while they see that it's undervalued, it certainly seems to be, have a richer valuation than its two competitors.
OK, that's interesting. Doug, I don't know what's happening at Irish Rail, but Barry J. White has done some analysis. He's spoken to commuters. He's looked at the whole sort of holistically at what's going on. It seems that our national rail network could be overtrading.
Yeah, well, I mean, the one thing I've noticed on social media in recent weeks is the amount of frustration that I've seen from people I follow around their dealings with Irish Rail. And what Barry White does here in this piece in the Irish Times, it's a good mix of some interesting anecdotes of individuals and their stories. He has the tale of Emma Jane Murphy, I think, who typically she's a childcare worker. Her commute is getting the 7:12 a.m. train from Connolly out to Skerries. And she's just increasingly had problems in terms of delays, cancellations, you know, making it very difficult. The creche she's working in doesn't have the manpower. She's having to get taxis out there, etc. There's a few other similar stories, but yeah, what the article also does is it backs it up with some of the facts. So this isn't just a few random anecdotes. The data tells you that this is going very badly. Looking at the Dart punctuality rate of 93% in June. Okay, so that's nearly one in every 10 Dart being late. That was down to 65% in October. Which
and
is
these are Éireann Road Éireann figures.
Yeah, this is I think he's quoting from their statistics. And the view Barry comes to, you know, the problems we've got a lot more people using our rail infrastructure. We've got a fleet and rolling stock that is aging. But in particular, what seems to be coming through is the signalling system is just outdated. It was put in the 70s. It's breaking. It's not working. And, you know, there needs to be more money invested in it. Because one of the saddest points is at the end of the story, there's a girl who's having problems. And so she's now learning to drive because she might be put back into her car. I mean, that goes against everything we're trying to achieve in terms of the energy revolution and decarbonisation.
Interesting, isn't it, Susan, that some of the rolling stock on the Dart is now over, what, 40 years old?
Yes, and they were talking about obsolescence like last decade, which is really striking here. I mean, as I've mentioned on occasion in the past here, Bobby, like when you come from Cork and you have, when you come from
the
Cork
trains,
and you're living,
here we go
now, right?
The train's
and,
your friend.
And your mom or dad is coming up from Cork or from wherever that they might be coming. Certainly, I mean, having collected mom off the train over a couple of times over the past couple of months, and particularly when there's an Irish rugby match on and you see the frustration of people as they're running up through Houston trying to get any mode of transport they can to get over to the Aviva or to Croke Park or wherever they might be going. A couple of numbers here stand out to me. One is that Irish Rail's figures show there was 38.5 million passenger journeys in 2022, and it's estimated this year it'll be 51 million. Now, I know obviously that was coming off the time of COVID and so on, but it just shows the massive increase in the amount that's there. And also as well, when you look at, I was driving out of Dublin, actually I was going down to Limerick the day that the Dart stopped, that the signalling went down in the Dart. You couldn't move on the quays at the time. And that was to do with cars. But obviously then the anecdote here is about getting a bus and so on. The real issue here is that there has to be, and there has to be, multi-billion investment made into this. And particularly in some areas so that there would be four tracks, so that at least they could, like in other parts of Europe, pull in if there is an issue. But a massive issue for people who are commuting and travelling. Yeah.
What's happening over in Trumpland, Doug? Keith Duggan's American letter today in the Irish Times tells us that Trump's delight at being Times Person of the Year is the latest illustration of his contradictory relationship with the legacy media.
Yeah, so Donald Trump is on the front page of Time magazine as Person of the Year. Actually, it's the second time that he has been. But the Keith's piece starts with the interesting story that actually hanging on the walls of one of Trump's golf courses in Scotland is what looks to be a Time magazine Person of the Year front page for March, dated March 2009. Donald Trump, The Apprentice, is a TV smash hit. The reality is that cover never existed. It's just a fantasy. But obviously, in the world of Donald Trump, the line between fantasy and reality is sometimes hard to draw. And the piece basically goes on to discuss this issue of the way the media has changed, Trump's ability to effectively kind of ignore what he would call the mainstream media, communicate directly, communicate through podcasts, you know, go on Joe Rogan, rather than, you know, the traditional CNNs and MSNBCs, whose viewership numbers are plummeting.
Yeah.
Now, you know, Fox, his preferred channel, is holding up. But Trump seems to be able to keep going, keep speaking to people and delude himself that he is worthy of being Person of the Year.
And then this other piece in the Irish Examiner tells us about Trump's planned tax cuts may fail to drive any US economic boost. What did you make of that, Susan?
The numbers in this piece are really, really striking. To be honest, I wouldn't fancy being in Trump's shoes stepping into the White House next year, because he really, an awful lot of what he said he would do is going to either be very expensive to do, infeasible to do, will make no difference at all.
Or upset a lot of people.
Or upset a lot of people. So, So on that note, first of all, the main thrust of this piece is about, they talk about extending tax cuts that are set to expire next year. Now, what those are, it's relating to the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, and they particularly relate to standard deductions and individual income tax rates. Let me translate that into what will really affect people's pocket. Now, the point they're making here is that if he goes on to extend those, they would cost an absolute fortune. And let me put a number on that. It would say that if they were going to let these changes expire, well, then it would reduce the fiscal deficit by 3.52 trillion euro equivalent over a decade. Wow. And also then he has gone on, as everyone keeps talking about the same thing that he said about, you know, reducing taxes on tips and overtime and so on like that. But the reality is he's also talked about promising to reduce corporation tax to 15%. Now that's going to be very hard to do, because new figures have shown that the US ran a $624 billion deficit in the first 2 months of the year. And that equates to borrowing $10 billion a day, Bobby. $10 billion a day.
Mad.
So the last thing I just want to say to Mr. Trump is, this seems to be constantly going under the radar, and I can't understand why. In January 2021, the euro to the dollar was 120. It's fallen to 105 today. Now, a quarter of our revenue in our own business comes from the US and in dollars. So I'm delighted with that. But for any exporter out of the US, how they can keep the dollar at that level is going to be very, very interesting indeed.
Doug, I don't know if you've ordered your turkey or where you've ordered it from, but we're told today in the Irish Times by Arthur Beasley that Christmas and the decline of Irish butchers, we'd love to get these customers the other 51 weeks of the year. 600 butchers, they've basically halved over the last 20 years, the number of butchers out there, which is a real shame, because I'm a huge fan of the butcher, the baker and the candlestick maker.
Yeah, it's very stark, the figures. 600 closing, maybe only 550 sort of independent on the high street butchers existing. And the article is talking about the extreme competition they're facing from supermarkets. Some interesting stories of butchers that Arthur Beasley's gone and spoken to. Seamus Etherson in Cabra, set up 17 years ago. I mean, he's actually a good example of someone who's managed to thrive. He now has 10 staff, 2,000 customers a week. And what he's doing is innovating.
Another shop in Castleknock.
Yeah, he's working on convenience, oven ready, you know, much more sophisticated than just going in and getting the slab of meat that you might have done previously. But the article speaks to sort of representative group for butchers, and they're talking about the fact that they claim supermarkets are using meat as a loss leader, or at least being prepared to sell meat at extremely thin margins to get people in the door. And that's very hard for butchers to compete with. And I mean, I know from my own experience, I used to have a butcher on Patrick Street that I would go to, shut down 3 or 4 years ago. I have ordered the turkey this year. It is from an independent butcher. And I guess the story says to people, you know, don't just go in one week a year to get your turkey. Try to support these guys and girls all year round.
Susan, I don't know about your favourite musical groove, but has it become a rut? Because the Daily Mail is telling us we only really listen to 20 songs.
Yeah, you know, as I was reading this, I was reflecting on my own musical groove, all right. And you know what? I think there's a real grain of truth to this. Like, my dad is listening to ABBA, like, basically since Waterloo came out. And he does, and he will listen to it over and over, much to my mother's chagrin, I suppose you could say. And so therefore, I was kind of more projecting on him than I was myself. I think that there is, like it says here, that we listen to the same 25 songs on repeat. And I think I do. I actually think that I do. But it's also interesting how 53% of people admit that they are comforted by tunes from their youth. And I know what it is about a song, but it does catapult you back to a time or a feeling of another time, all right. So I think that there is a grain of truth, all right, to this.
And Doug Keating, you'll have to stop listening to that Bee Gees number over and over again.
Yeah, I mean, I'm guilty of this. And apparently, age of 35, after that, you don't listen to anything new ever again. And that is a problem.
Well, I'll let you know when I get to that age, Doug.
All right, guys. Susan Hayes Cullett and Doug Keating, thanks a million.
Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland.
Saturday morning at 11 on News Talk.
Stripe helps many of the world's most influential companies grow their revenue and build a more profitable business. Whether it's Hertz making checkout a smooth ride for their customers, OpenAI answering unprecedented demand, or PGA chipping away at back office inefficiency, Stripe's financial infrastructure platform helps companies achieve ambitious goals. No matter what success looks like for your business, Stripe helps ensure the complexity of financial systems doesn't get in your way. Learn more at stripe.com.